Well, my friends, welcome to a special broadcast, Progressive News Network, Hunger Report, Hunger Activists in Fort Lauderdale, the good people of Food Not Bombs, will be talking to us tonight. It's an important issue because especially during this holiday season, I want my good friends, the progressive activists out there, to be thinking not just of their friends and family, not just of their children or the parents. I want them to think about our brothers and sisters out there in the world. And our good friends with Food Not Bombs has been feeding the hungry for quite some time. And unfortunately, some of our cities have actually criminalized not just being poor, because that's been criminalized for some time, but they've actually criminalized sharing food with the hungry. And that should not be. The first thing that you heard, that was what's been called the singing comet. That's actually sounds recorded from the European Space Station's landing on the comet. That's something they're calling comet music. But before we go too much further, I do want you to hear this. This is Mr. Nathan Pym talking about the hunger in Fort Lauderdale. When Jesus can't step up, the good people of Food Not Bombs step in, and I think that's marvelous.
There's still some religious people that are working on this stuff as well.
Indeed, indeed.
But yeah, you know, Friday we're going to be probably risking the rest sharing, and we're probably not going to get tickets like they did on Sunday. You know, just to give you some general information on what's going on, I also, like, just got out of jail, like, a few hours ago because a lot of us Food Not Bombs folk tried to go to some of the offices, the people who have been passing these laws, and they did not like that and had us arrested. So that's kind of what's going on with us right now.
Okay.
So
and also, by the way,
we were arrested yesterday downtown.
So that was Nathan Pym. We're going to hear a little bit more from him in just a minute. But I want to frame this for you. You know, there are people who say, well, you know, if they just went to the right place, there's plenty of resources. Well, unfortunately, the poor, the hungry, the homeless can't, you know, just hop in their car and drive to another location. You know, they've tried to find shelter someplace, and a library is often the only place they can find certain health care facilities, restrooms, being able to wash off and stuff like that, use the restroom facilities. It's one of the few public spaces available to them. And the homeless, especially here in Florida, do tend to congregate during the wintertime. And to ignore these people, and for those who are concerned about property values and have criminalized the sharing of food, these people are just trying to provide minimum foodstuffs for the poor. So here's the complete interview with Mr. Nathan Pym, and then we'll hear from his wife, Jillian. So this is Nathan Pym.
When Jesus can't step up, the good people of Food Not Bombs step in, and I think that's marvelous.
There's still some religious people that are working on this stuff as well.
Indeed, indeed.
But yeah, you know,
here we go. Misfire there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Nathan, a volunteer with Food Not Bombs. Nathan, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, I really appreciate you coming on because I think very, very few people are aware of just how serious the state authorities take it when someone sets about to feed the hungry. Were you surprised initially to find out how serious an offense that is?
I was not extremely surprised, merely because there is actually, you know, the last several years has been an increased history in the implementation of these laws, particularly in various cities of Florida. And the city of Fort Lauderdale has, in fact, been talking about different ways of imposing a sharing ban in the downtown area since, as far as I'm aware, at least 2010 or 2011. So this is really just they finally found out a way to pass a law where they could enforce it. And sadly, I'm just not very surprised that they went through with this. They've been very adamant about how necessary this is for the quality of life for the business and tourism establishment in downtown.
You know, I think many people would be frankly shocked because so many people grew up in one or another religious tradition where generally alms for the poor or food for the poor is not only recommended, but, you know, often saints are pointed out who've gone to great lengths to feed the hungry and the homeless. It is a real blight on our civilization that for presumed economic interests would outlaw or criminalize the poor and outlaw the Good Samaritan effort to feed these hungry people. I've had the pleasure and the honor of having Keith McHenry on in the past, one of the founders of Food Not Bombs, and he's told his story. Tell us your story. Tell us what happened over the weekend.
The sharing ban became enacted on October 31st, Friday on Halloween. So we share on Friday. So we had our sharing on Friday, and there were some police there, but they actually didn't say anything about the sharing ban or say they were going to enforce it on us. So that was peaceful. But then on Sunday, as many people have seen, Love Thy Neighbor was prevented from sharing and ticketed, basically given notice to appears for violating the sharing ban ordinances. And actually several other groups were prevented from sharing, so, some smaller groups who nonetheless are still some of the weekly people who come out there and are consistently part of the food aid supply for downtown. So yeah, but Love Thy Neighbor is one of the larger weekly sharings along with our own. And it was, you know, there was a huge crowd of people that lined up there, and they had the option of walking several, you know, a good distance to another part of downtown where they could get the food on private property at a church. But, you know, the reason we're in this area downtown is because there are chronically homeless people stranded there and they're in need of food aid. So that's what happened on Sunday, and it seems like enforcement of this so far is going to continue, and we may be arrested on Friday at our next sharing now that they're more strictly enforcing this.
You know, I mean, I can't help but feel there's a degree of irony there that this would be enacted on Halloween when, in fact, it's a holiday known here in the exceptional country of America where children go door to door and collect gifts of food. But I understand you guys went another step. You went a step further. You try to go speak to the people who enacted this uncivilized bit of ordinance and hope to bring their attention to the fact that the impact that this actually has on real people. Tell me how that went.
Well, we've been speaking really for years and even more adamantly the last few months to the city commission about these laws and how much suffering they're going to create. And it's fallen on deaf ears. They've been very apathetic. There's been several other backers of this law that represent the business class in Fort Lauderdale, including the Downtown Development Authority of Fort Lauderdale. So we decided yesterday, on Tuesday, to pay a visit to the Downtown Development Authority's office, which is actually like a block away from Stranahan Park, where the sharing ban enforcements are taking place. And they reacted very poorly. We knocked on the door. We knew someone was in there. After several minutes, someone came out, and we weren't in there chanting or screaming anything. We very politely told them that we were looking to speak with one of the higher up executives for the DDA. The woman, you know, also very politely said that we were more than welcome to wait in the hallway, and that it might be a while, but that someone would be there. Executive Director Chris Friend was particularly cited as someone who would be willing to speak to us. And then it turned out, you know, FLPD showed up maybe 20 minutes later. They said that woman had told them that she was afraid for her safety because of us, and that they wanted us gone. So we were misled into thinking we could stay there. And we insisted that, you know, there are people on the streets right now that are going hungry because of these people's policies and these people's support of these laws, and that we wanted to speak to someone right there, and we weren't willing to leave and come back or schedule an appointment. So they had seven of us arrested, and while some of us were being loaded into a paddy wagon, there were people outside filming us being loaded in the paddy wagon, and they arrested another person for basically filming on a sidewalk and charged her with trespassing and resisting arrest. So they responded very poorly. We hadn't spoken much with the DDA in the past, and due to the urgency of the situation, felt this was a good time, and they responded with almost a stereotypical apathetic response, which was basically to not talk to us and have the police come and, you know, grab us and take us away.
Now, obviously, this was discussed or debated by the city commission before it was passed? It was passed by city commission at the behest of DDA?
Yeah, the DDA and the Chamber of Commerce are kind of basically two organizations that represent downtown business interests, and they are two of the groups that would always, two of the very few groups who would show up to these city commission meetings and say they supported these laws. But yeah, the city commission had public hearings for these laws. They actually passed a number of other laws targeting homeless life, including a camping ban, an expansion of panhandling restrictions, and more in the last few months. But yeah, during the month of October, they had two hearings to discuss the sharing ban, but they chose to basically put them at the end of both of those meetings. And so at the first meeting, discussion of the sharing ban ordinance, which is not called a sharing ban ordinance in the agenda whatsoever, took place, I believe, after 1 a.m. And on the second hearing, where it was passed, the discussion took place at 3 a.m. And again, you know, people actually stuck it out there to speak, but they were not willing to listen to anyone's opinion on it. They basically, their decision was already made.
It's such a horrible thing. It's such an indictment of our the generously called civilization that we live in. Do you think, short of shaming them, which seems like a real uphill battle, that there's any way to get this reconsidered?
Well, there is a history. You know, a lot of people have been toting around a number that something like 21 cities in the last 2 years have passed sharing bans. Several of them have been overturned, including the city of Philadelphia in recent years, where public pressure basically got the city officials to change their mind. I don't know, the city commission of Fort Lauderdale is notoriously not interested in public input, so I don't know what level of outrage would be necessary to really make them change their mind. It is interesting to note that the entire city commission of Fort Lauderdale is up for re-election in February and March. Maybe that will give them some pause. But the other option is really just to take it to court. And as far as I know, Arnold Abbott and Love Thy Neighbor will be pursuing a lawsuit of some sort against the city of Fort Lauderdale to stop this law from being enacted, further enforced, and probably anyone else that is arrested for sharing food will hopefully be a part of that effort as well. It's something that may be decided in like a federal appeals court or something like that. These things are, you know, they're tied up in civil liberties and religious rights issues, and they tend to go on for a very long time through the appeals system before a final decision is made.
From time to time, there has been support from ACLU. Are you guys getting any support from ACLU?
There are a number of ACLU attorneys who have at least been offering advice and are aware of the situation. The National Lawyers Guild is also involved. The National Coalition to End Homelessness has been very focused on the sharing ban in Fort Lauderdale, and a number of other civil liberties attorneys groups all are very concerned about the issue. And I can't say that any particular organization at this point is going to be representing any of the plaintiffs in this situation, but it's definitely a civil liberties attorney's bonanza right now in Fort Lauderdale for people that want to, you know, be involved in a very misguided and civil liberties infringing law that is very high profile. So I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot from them over the coming weeks.
Let me ask you this. For people who are concerned about the increasing number of homeless and feeding these people, where can they go? How can they help? How can they support the efforts to feed these poor people?
Well, anyone can really participate in sharing food downtown, even if they might be at risk of arrest. We're going to be sharing, continue to share on Fridays. Arnold Abbott, Love Thy Neighbor, is hopefully going to continue to share on Sundays. It's all at Stranahan Park at 10 East Broward Boulevard. There are a number of indoor sharing church groups that are also still sharing that, you know, for the most part are not affected by these new restrictions. But, you know, people can still also, if they you know, want to get some food together, there's plenty of opportunity to pull up in this area of Stranahan Park and open up their trunk and pass food out. That's what actually the vast majority of the food aid supply for homeless people in downtown is actually, there's some large groups that share a lot of food in large sharings, like Food Out Bombs, but most of the food is actually just individual volunteers from church groups, so just plain individuals who come down there and share whatever they have. There's cars pulling up into that area really every couple of hours downtown, and I think that's partially why they're so focused on that area. It's where the most needy people are, and it's where the most help is actually going to, and they want to displace all of that activity to places that are not quite as hotly contested by the business class, essentially.
Amazing. I was wondering, are you involved in any other work with Food Not Bombs?
Well, obviously it's taking up a lot of our time here to not just do the sharings, but pressure all the different city and business officials who are in part of this law. I also run a blog called Resist Fort Lauderdale Homeless Hate Laws. The site is homelesshatelaws.blogspot.com, and that's been a project of mine for the last 6 months or so that's been very carefully chronicling the passing and enforcement of the sharing ban and some of those other laws I mentioned earlier. So that's a great deal of our activity at the moment. There's been a lot of other things that Food Not Bombs has done in the past, like sharing food at protests and doing puppet shows and different stuff like that, but really our efforts are very narrowly focused on trying to keep our sharings going and trying to ensure the rights and safety of homeless people downtown who, even if people are ticketed or arrested for sharing food downtown, the vast majority of the oppression that occurs because of these policies is directed at homeless people, and we try to do a lot to document what happens to them and safeguard their rights and improve their situation. And that's another thing that the city and the people backing these laws don't want to talk about is they try to make it all about the food sharing, but the large groups like our group, Food Not Bombs, Peanut Butter and Jelly Project, Love Thy Neighbor, the other real work we do is that these sharings offer opportunities where we meet people, we have discussions with them, we find out their needs, and we actually do refer them to services that, or to, random opportunities we might be aware of to get people housed, to get them jobs, to get them the paperwork they need, you know, if they're having trouble getting an ID and stuff like that. We actually do a great deal of independent, autonomous work to help homeless people, and depriving us of having these sharings to engage with them where there are a lot of homeless people in one place actually has a tremendous detrimental effect towards actually, you know, getting the real help that homeless people need to them, because the city's efforts are never going to be enough. The county's efforts, you know, they're all trailing the level of crisis here, and now effective independent groups that are trying to take action on this and actually do it in a much more efficient manner and a much less costly manner are basically being threatened with closure.
Are the church groups finding the same level of harassment?
Well, most of the church groups have their own property that they share on, and they might have some new restrictions to face, but for the most part, it seems like they're going to be okay. But obviously, Love Thy Neighbor, many of the people, volunteers there, have sort of a religious mandate for what they do. And as you can see on Sunday, along with Arnold, there were two clergy members who were essentially given a notice to appear arrest for sharing. So it does seem like they're not giving any favors to those people. So I would say, you know, they're not really, especially based on Sunday, they're not really cutting anyone any breaks.
Well, Nathan, I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing on behalf of so many of us. And does Food Not Bombs Fort Lauderdale have a website or a Facebook site that people could donate to?
Yeah, we have, as I said, the majority of our information for this campaign online that people can access lies at the homelesshatelaws.blogspot website.
Okay.
So anything relating to that situation is there. On Facebook, we have a group called Food Not Bomb South Florida that is kind of a group for not just ours, but the other Food Not Bombs group in the area. And then we do have a fundraiser campaign for bail funds, and on a it's also a contingency in case our materials and our sharing supplies are confiscated at the sharing, which is something that is unfortunately kind of a real possibility. And people can find a link to that on the Food Not Bombs, the Facebook page. And I'm working on a sort of a recap from yesterday on the Homeless Hate Laws webpage right now, and they'll be able to find a link to the fundraiser there as well.
Well, again, thank you so much, Nathan, for the good work that you're doing, and thank you for taking some time to talk to us. Have a good day, sir.
Okay,
best
no
of
problem,
luck.
Richard. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Next up, we've got an interview with Jillian Pym, who is undertaking a hunger strike to call upon the city to change these laws to allow the feeding of the homeless and hungry.
This is Rick Spezak, Progressive News Network. How are you today?
I'm very tired today. How are you?
I guess. You know, Jillian, some of our listeners may not know that there is a group of good people trying to bring to the attention of Fort Lauderdale that there are hungry people in need of food, and they're trying to feed them, and they're being arrested for it. Could you explain and fill in the details how you're involved with this?
I've been sharing food with a group called Food Not Bombs since May 2010. The group's been around since 2006, and we've been keeping up with these laws since they were in the draft format back in January. I'm sorry, my brain's kind of googly.
Sure, that's okay.
And we've been keeping an eye on it, and we've been doing what we can to get them to stop. There's been 5 ordinances that they've passed. There's been one making it illegal for homeless people to sleep, making it illegal to go to the bathroom, own belongings, panhandle, which is the only way that they have to get money for the most part, and sharing food. Like, not the people who share food, they're not in trouble for eating, but we get harassed for sharing food.
This runs so counter to what everyone what many people think of as basic, you know, good Samaritan behavior, according to the precepts of most religions. There's not a religion out there that I know of, and I've studied comparative religion, that says that the thing you're supposed to do with the poor is to help them, help feed them, help clothe them, give them shelter. And I understand that Food Not Bombs, as an international organization, has been fighting to feed people for a long time. And it seems to me so counter to all humanity to not allow this, to make it difficult for people who are just trying to share food. Now, I understand that you've undertaken a hunger strike.
Yes. At 1:15 today, I'll be entering day 11.
My goodness. You have undertaken such a noble, noble effort, and one can only applaud the strength of will that would cause you to undertake such a difficult and dangerous path. But I'm going to play devil's advocate for just a second. I want all our revolutionaries to succeed, to thrive. I hate to see any more martyrs. Well, there's been too many martyrs in my book. Your position is unassailable morally. Do you think there's a place to consider your own safety at some point? Hopefully you're just going to fast for a limited period of time.
No, I'm in this for the long haul.
Wow. I hope and pray for your safety, my friend. Your concern for the poor, for the hungry, is so laudable and so incredible. The strength of will you're showing is so immense. We've seen saints over the centuries who've taken that stand to fast until some great moral dilemma can be resolved. I wish you every success. Is there any way that we as listeners, as supporters of you, can help in you? Should we call the city? Should we call the state? Should we call downtown development? What are your recommendations, my friend?
Well, I'm asking people to wear purple in solidarity. On Friday, a few hundred people will be fasting in solidarity for 24 hours. On the homeless hate laws website, the resist homeless hate laws website is homelesshatelaws.blogspot.com. They have a list of all of the contacts. Don't bother with the mayor because his voicemail is full, his email is full. He's been harassed to the umpteenth degree. But the Women's Club, the Downtown Development Authority, the Chamber of Commerce,
any of
the other commissioners.
Yeah. Well, please,
in boxes.
Please take care of yourself. It's such a valiant battle, and we have just a tremendous respect for you. But please, stay in the battle for the long pull, okay? Jillian, you are a noble warrior for peace and for justice, and we thank you for your stand. But I ask you as a fellow colleague, take care of yourself too, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend, and best of luck. Hopefully, their hearts will open. This is Jillian with Food Not Bombs, undertaking a fast until the city changes its guidelines. Thank you, Jillian.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Jillian and Nathan talking about this situation. Now we're going to bring in Keith McHenry, one of the original founders of Food Not Bombs back during the Vietnam War, who is still a hunger activist and a peace activist. This is Keith McHenry.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor to bring our good friend and brother Keith McHenry, of one of the founders of Food Not Bombs. Keith, how are you today, sir?
Very, very good, except for the concern about our volunteers and other people feeding the hungry in Florida and in other cities. There's essentially threats in a few other cities outside of Florida.
Well, of course, as always, the powers that be tend to forget human need when it comes to keeping the streets looking spick and span and keeping the riffraff out of view. How do you view this whole movement of criminalizing the poor?
Well, you know, today's news is Obama needs billions of dollars more to fight the never-ending war in the Middle East. And at the same time, back here at home, we have increasing numbers of people living on the streets. It's estimated there's over 3 million Americans living on the streets. And that's not only the only people eating with Food Not Bombs and other groups trying to provide food to the hungry. You know, families with apartments, people, you know, homeless people with two jobs that can't afford to rent an apartment. Those people are becoming a growing legion in the United States, while our resources are going to bail out banks, going to fight wars around the world in behalf of the large corporations for which our tax dollars are bailing out. And I think it's becoming a real crisis. And hopefully a lot of people see it that way. This poor, Chef Abbott, who just was arrested, he's facing $500 fine and 60 days in jail. He's a World War II vet. For the last 20 years, he's been providing free meals in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, only to find himself getting the police coming up and rudely telling them that they're taking food right from him as he's trying to feed it to hungry people. And I've been in that park in front of the library in Fort Lauderdale and have seen the abusive behavior of the police towards the homeless and towards Fort Lauderdale Food Not Bombs. And finally, after years of campaigning, they've come up with this crazy law to legitimize the arrest of people sharing food with the hungry in Fort Lauderdale. And it's really outrageous. We expect Saturday the Food Not Bombs activists will be arrested, maybe even today, that we're bracing for another wave of arrest in Fort Lauderdale.
Some of the activists have done exactly what you would think the powers that be want. they went to the Downtown Development Authority. They asked for an appointment. They were told to wait outside. They said, we will wait patiently, only to find that the police were called on them, and they were all arrested for trying to talk reasonably to people of good conscience. It seems to me that this has gone beyond mere bad taste. This is really a slap in the face to humanity. And, you know, I think you pointed out that, you know, all this war funding is taking just a terrible toll on social services. You know, we are in this boat together. We are in one country. We can't just turn our back on those who've been mistreated by the economic system.
Yeah, I want to point out that, you know, sharing free food with your neighbor is an unregulated, you know, act of compassion. And I think that a lot of the, you know, why local officials in Fort Lauderdale and officials all across the United States are proposing these laws, passing these laws, is they don't want any pressure on their tax resources to go to the poor. And as a result, if they can hide the large numbers of people requiring free food, if they can hide the fact that they themselves, you know, why is not the city of Fort Lauderdale not making sure that all of the people living in its boundaries have something to eat? They're a wealthy city, just about 100 yards from where people are now being arrested outside the library, are beautiful yachts in a channel. You know, million-dollar yachts just docked there, but they can't provide money and resources to make sure no one is living on the streets and no one is needing free food. The other thing is outrageous is, you know, it's come to light with, about, you know, over the years of the crimes of the major banks, Chase Manhattan, you know, Chase Bank and Wells Fargo. These banks have robbed the American people blind. This is on top of everything else. And there's foreclosed homes for every American. You know, there's like, you know, like two or three foreclosed homes in the Fort Lauderdale area that are empty, abandoned, growing weeds, falling in disrepair. And those people could have been housed. You know, there could have been a federal program to convert that housing into housing for people living on the streets. They could have eliminated the problem with policies that were smart, but instead they're just allowing people to suffer. I don't know, you know, anybody who lived on the streets in this country realizes how rough that is and how difficult it can be just to get basic services. And in Florida, frequently you need a valid Florida ID, driver's license, to be able to get food at a soup kitchen, and that policy is probably one of the most severe, I think, in the United States.
You know, the mayor's response when questioned was, hey, we're just enforcing the law. I think these people who are sharing food maybe should benefit from some of that let's look forward and not backward bullshit that the government has offered all these torturers. Wouldn't you think that would be a fair...
Yeah, it is outrageous. You have Jamie Dimon robbing the American people billions of dollars, and he doesn't spend an hour in jail. You have Dick Cheney hobnobbing around the world. He's advocating torture. You have Obama, you know, advocating the national, you know, like signing the National Defense Authorization Act into law. Anybody, you know, if the economy goes even further south and gets worse and worse, and there starts to become civil unrest, is people are going hungry because their food is being taken by the police right out of their mouths, things can get really out of control. And we could see, you know, like Ferguson, Missouri, will be nothing compared to what could happen in the United States. So, I mean, I think that with the Senate going Republican, with the House even more Republican, you know, with Obama going over to Asia to try to pressure Japan and the other Pacific Rim countries into the, you know, Trans-Pacific Partnership, which uh-huh. will then even further impoverish American workers and American people, make it almost impossible even for a very progressive, liberal, democratic majority, if that ever came about, to even do anything. They'd be hampered permanently by this trade agreement. It's worse than NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, which always already wrecked our economy. It's worse than the policies of the World Trade Organization that have damaged, you know, the, you know, forced many people to suffer. And, you know, and these policies are, you know, going to exacerbate hunger. You know, this is such a huge crisis. Not only are poor people not able to get access to, you know, good organic food because our tax dollars subsidize the beef industry and corn syrup industry. That's where our money is going to, not to, you know, natural foods and to organic farming. We're not subsidized, you know, in those areas. At the same time, massive beef production is paid for by our tax dollars. That's one of the, according to the UN, leading causes of climate change. And yet, Obama is like, and the Republican Party are just going along about, oh yeah, more of the same policies, maybe even more fracking, more oil, maybe XL Keystone, all these things, which then damage agriculture itself because you get floods, you get droughts that we're seeing, you get severe weather that reduces the crops. You have the TPP, the trade agreement, will make it so that more genetically modified foods are grown, that labeling laws are banned in the United States and around the world, and it's, you know, going to be one thing on top of another, so that, you know, Monsanto and these Cargill and these companies can just jack up the seed prices, the chemical prices. And we saw already what happened when the confluence of these policies had an impact in what became the Arab Spring, and now the chaos that we are seeing throughout the world as a direct result. And many people point to these policies as being responsible. And so on the other hand, to be arresting people for feeding the hungry when the policies are creating massive hunger is really outrageous.
Well, sir, thank you so very much, and we thank you so much for the work that you do feeding the hungry and then helping people learn how to raise safe, good food for themselves. Thank you so much, Mr. McHenry.
Thank you so much, and please stay tuned because it looks like Indianapolis, Funabons may be in trouble. There's a few other cities that are now facing potential efforts by local authorities to shut them down.
Thanks again, sir. Take care,
Keith. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And our last guest of this special show is Mr. Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive and the Three Pundits. So this is Dennis Campbell commenting on tomorrow's show, the theme of which is, with the election behind us, how do we continue to promote the progressive agenda? What tactics do we need to consider? So this is Dennis Campbell from the UK offering his suggestions.
Well, the biggest task we have facing us is getting people to vote. Full stop. The article that I wrote the morning after, the night before, the night of the big massacre, spoke very specifically about turnout. And I used the state of Colorado as an example because it was really the only one for which I had some fairly accurate data. In the state of Colorado, 1.7 million people turned out to vote. If you compare and contrast that to 2012, 2.5 million people turned out to vote and swung the state towards President Barack Obama and the Democrats. There are 3.6 million registered voters in the state of Colorado. And I think what you're seeing happening is that the flood of money produces so many negative adverts that the desired effect is to get people so disgusted that they don't turn out and vote. The only people that end up voting are the true zealots that believe in the right-wing agenda, and that's the ones that continually win. So unless and until we can find a way to get people that understand that if you can't be arsed to get up off your arse and vote, then you got what you deserved. Because unless and until you can get people to vote in anything other than the quadrennial presidential election where they realize that's important, you're going to continue to lose state legislatures, which control the agenda now in 30 states. You're going to lose the House. You're going to lose the House at least until 2022, because you're not going to be able to get another census redistricting until 2020. And you're going to have a really rough go in the Senate. You know, everybody's saying that the board favors the Democrats in 2016. Well, of course it does. The presidential election and more blue states are up. But I think it's very complacent of everybody to just sort of sit back and assume that Hillary's going to waltz to victory and that the Democrats are going to regain control without some massive soul-searching and hard work, because essentially the U.S. is a one-party system. It's, you know, a far-right lunatic party and a slightly right-of-center party called the Democrats. So it's really diminished and degraded the capability of the progressive movement.
You know, I think you make a pretty good case. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking to Mr. Dennis Campbell of UK Progressive Worldview and a variety of other projects. A long-time progressive activist and a strong voice for a progressive country. Dennis, let me ask you a question, and I won't say it's devil's advocate, because I think I believe in this analysis as well, as correct as you are, and I think you've really got a good, important point to make there. I think there's another point, that is, when prospective civil servants, whether you look at President Obama or pick one, make a strong progressive case and then steer hard right and basically deny in practice those things that they'd argued for and advocated during the candidacy phase of their political service, it's hard to look a voter in the face and say, this is important, these guys are working for us, stand up with them because they've got our backs, when clearly they don't. And they do not govern in the same tenor that they sought the office. And the cynicism, I think, is justified.
The Democrats have clearly gone back to the old West Wing Ron Silver line, please don't hurt me. You know, they cower in their own shadows, and they are very much afraid of everyone and everything. I mean, if you look at the way in which this last campaign was executed, they absolutely refused to do anything that would give any indication that they supported the president or that they supported any of the policies. And that said, the president didn't do a particularly good job of supporting his own policies, particularly around immigration. Everybody was so afraid of an outcome that happened anyways, that it really begged the question, well, if you're going to lose, you might as well go down swinging. But these guys just don't get that. They just still think, because they're surrounded by this coterie of advisors and media advisors and PR flacks and former media executives and former reporters and others that are, you know, telling them, you know, oh, don't go too far to the left there, or don't go too far this way here, and make sure you're a good centrist candidate, and, you know, don't embrace the president and his record, and don't embrace anything else that's going on. You've got to run against Washington, you've got to run against Obama. I mean, there are so many mixed messages out there that look absolutely ludicrous when you look at people like Grimes and others who couldn't even come up and say that they voted for the president when they were indeed delegates for him. It's just, it's reached a level of ludicrousness that you really begin to wonder. Their hypocrisy is so huge on all stages that nothing is really ever going to change unless and until you get people like Bernie Sanders Elizabeth Warren,
right,
out there on a regular basis pressing the party to move itself further back to the left, because otherwise you're going to find yourself in this continual choice between the lesser of two or three evils, depending on how many candidates run.
You know, here in Florida, we had the absolutely plausible deniability of Charlie Crist as the pretend Democratic candidate, whose agenda was chimerical, to put it generously. Charlie was for Charlie, and the party chose to run with that as a standard bearer. There wasn't a progressive activist out there who thought this guy had anything really seriously important to offer. And those that supported him with their efforts did so with the lessers of two evils sort of mentality.
I think it was even more than that, Rick. It was, people were so against Chris, and that doesn't work. I mean, look back to all of the elections of you know, we were against Bush Jr. or Bush 43 when he was running against Al Gore, but nobody was really in love with and excited about Al Gore. We were against Bush again when, you know, he ran against Kerry. But nobody was really excited for Kerry. And if you make your entire modus operandi fighting against someone rather than fighting for someone, I think the difference in 08 with Obama is that people were enthusiastically for him. They were slightly less enthusiastically for him in 12. But I don't see any sort of a groundswell other than this groundswell and feeling of inevitability for Hillary Clinton. And I think she's got some serious, serious flaws and risks out there because of whom she's worked with and supported in the past.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot vote for that woman, the girl from Goldman Sachs, and worse. Her militarist policies alone are shocking. Let me ask you, because of your perspective on the continent, a little different question as well. We now have positioned the American military clearly in favor of a fascist government in Ukraine, and we're reaping the absolutely predictable benefits. Now the Soviets are flying off the coast of California, and they plan on patrolling the Caribbean. Where do you see this going?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think Putin is a wild card, but he's not an idiot. You know, he sees you know, President Obama and the U.S. Congress as being relatively weak at this point. And I think he's just rattling sabers as best he can, considering everything else that's going on right now. I'm not terribly worried about, you know, patrols. I think, you know, if you step back away from Fox News and the right-wing media for a little bit, which is almost impossible because I was there for 4 days and, you know, driving long distances, and I was stunned at just doing a scan and seek on the radio dial at how vile it is.
I mean, yeah.
It was truly shocking between the Bible thumpers or the outright Obama haters and the right-wing warmongers, the number of programs that there were in the Northeast Corridor driving, because I drove from Boston to Washington and then I had to go back to JFK. It was truly astonishing programming, truly an astonishing number of commercial adverts that appear all the time. And even though the campaigns are over, just on things that are, you know, totally unacceptable anywhere else in the world. I mean, you know, ask your doctor about, you know, drug X. I don't ask my doctor about drug X. I don't care what drug X is. I mean, it was advert after advert after, you know, write to you. And of course, you know, being in D.C., you get a lot of that. But, you know, write to your congressman about, you know, X. Write about Y. Talk about this. Protest that. And it was truly over the top. And I don't think people who live in it every day see how incestuous and how truly dangerous this level of advert and control and messaging really is. I mean, we don't get anywhere near that amount, and thank goodness over here.
Well, Dennis, I can't thank you enough for your time. I wish you full return of all your energy and health.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it's not fun to be unwell, but you know, hopefully we'll be back in the saddle later on this week when we do our next Three Muckrakers podcast, available on iTunes. I have to put my plug in there.
Of course.
We've got a former BBC anchor and a couple other really interesting folks, and the environmental journalist Robert Hunsaker joins us next week. So we've got a nice little product that continues to grow, and episode 8 is live, and we'll have a best of also up later today.
Congratulations, and thanks again, my friend, for joining us.
All the best.
Take care.
Well, folks, that's it for tonight. I hope you tune in tomorrow.
I've traveled around this country from shore to shining shore. It really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. I saw the weary farmer a plowing sod and loam. I heard the auction hammer just a knocking down his home. But the banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the farmer sweated for. I've seen the seamen standing idly by the shore, and I heard their bosses saying, got no work for you no more. But the banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the seamen sweated for. I've seen the weary miner scrubbing coal dust from his back, and I've heard his children crying, got no coal to heat the shack. But the banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the miner sweated for. I've seen my brothers working throughout this mighty land. I prayed we'd get together and together make a stand. Then we might own those banks of marble, with a guard at every door, and we would share those vaults of silver that we have sweated for.
Yeah.